Not Quite Right features discussions that are unfiltered and uncensored and may include themes that are inappropriate for younger listeners. Also, I swear a lot.
Something doesn't seem quite right.
Welcome to Not Quite Right. My name's Ed.
And I'm Amanda.
And this is the fifth and final Daredevil for the July 2025 Not Quite Right prize.
Yeah, it's sad.
So Daredevils are people who have signed up for the honour and the privilege of being critiqued on air on the podcast. Mm. So we read through each story, we'll talk about the story, break it down, share our thoughts, and hopefully all learn something in the process.
Maybe break down the author as well.
That's the plan. I feel like we may have gone a little bit easy on some of our Daredevils this round.
I always feel horribly harsh.
Let's ramp up the... Oh. It's our last Daredevil. Let's really go hard. Sorry, Marina.
That sounds fair. Perfectly fair.
So as a reminder, the prompts for this round were the word crane, the action prompt of burning something, and the anti-prompt of break the rule, use active voice. And so our sacrificial lamb for this episode is Marina R.M. Lane. And it's Marina's first time as a Daredevil. So thank you, Marina, for putting yourself out there. And Marina sent us the audio for this story, and it will be read by her husband, Rich Lane. So here is Hand Over Hand by Marina R.M. Lane.
The table had been made. Two croissants, two cortadas, two napkins folded into cranes, and a gas candle centered on white linen. The night patisserie was their usual rendezvous point, but today's meeting was not sanctioned and his phrases were fumbled on nervous fingers. Even retired spies ought to have their meetings sanctioned, but the question burning in his palms had alighted on the pager before he thought better. What was one flaggable event on a clean record? The real talking was done in code, a smattering of Victorian glove speak, sign language, and made-up gestures only they understood. It was their way. Her glove of ivory velvet was twirled around the fingers of her left hand, meaning, "We're being watched." Fingers flicked toward the window, where a puffed-up gray cat pressed its wet nose to the panes and glowered. The table was beaten with laughter, their gloves making soft thumps like a pair of beating hearts. "We should get one of those for our bread shop," he signed in leather gloves gartered over the heel of his hand, noticeably worn on the trigger finger. The bakery could be built, but it had to double as an information hub, because you never really retired from being a spy. "So why did you call for me?" her hands asked. His fingers twitched in amusement at her sign for phone, rotary dialed even though touch tone and paging was the norm in their business. She was stubborn, classy, and lovable in the kind of way that had many of his old contacts asking after her. Dash it all. He should have done this a long time ago. But the old work, their partnership on the bakery project, the amicable distance, it all felt like a well-worn glove he didn't want to lose. Would this new glove fit as snugly? Would she want an old pair like him? She fidgeted with her cuff buttons, obviously sensing his nerves. He was a fool for her. So he stood, removing both gloves, and made to drop them, the way they'd learned so long ago that two people meeting in secret might say, "I love you." He threw them down, a jolt of nerves making the act more forceful than intended. But one landed squarely in the bowl of the gas candle. They snatched for the smoking glove, knocking hands and toppling candle. Had two ex-spies ever been more clumsy? He was worrying she'd burned her hands as fire leapt onto the napkin cranes, igniting them like Olympian torches. Their tiny coffees couldn't douse it, so they grabbed the corners of the tablecloth and smothered the flames. The patisserie's owner came running, bemoaning the ruined table set. Making apologies was done with words, but it was her bare hand sliding into his that started the real fire. The table was ruined, and they'd likely be banned from their favorite rendezvous. But when they wove their fingers together, gloves discarded, skin needing no code, he felt the world was their rendezvous.
So thank you, Marina, and thank you, Rich, for that reading. And Marina left us a voicemail message, so we'll play that now.
Hello, this is Marina Lane, one of your July daredevils. I'm calling in to tell you a little bit about the inspiration for my story. My idea really started when my writing group, the Goblins, were discussing what passive voice means. One of my goblins, Natalie, threw out an example sentence. It was, "A gloved hand extended in her direction." That sentence really set me off down a path. For me, there's something really alluring about gloves, and I loved the idea of getting to explore a story that's almost from the perspective of these gloves, yet not. I didn't want the gloves to necessarily be the arbiters of the action. I thought a lot about what passive voice means and the object-centric nature of it, and decided to do something a bit weird with my story. I wanted to remove the main agents, pun intended, of the story and focus on their gloves as a way to represent them and to communicate. So this got me down some research rabbit holes, and what you'll hear, hopefully, is a recording done by my husband of Hand Over Hand.
So thank you, Marina. And I didn't pick up on this when we were reading the story, but obviously the loss of agency, we're talking about two agents.
Yeah.
I didn't pick up on that, but that's an extra layer.
It's very cute.
So let's move through the story and maybe we'll start with the title, Hand Over Hand.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good title and certainly fitting with the story that follows. Interestingly, I believe Dean vague tweeted about this one, mm-hmm. and he was talking about a story which had a missed opportunity for a pun in the title. And of course, Dean is obsessed with puns, yeah. and so he couldn't help himself. But that was this story, and his suggested title was Glove Affair, which I do also love. Yeah. So, you know, that's something to consider. But yeah, I think this title works and fits the story. Mm.
And I'll say at the outset, I really like the premise of this story and the whole idea here of we've got this layer of communication that's hidden from like other people, but obviously we're privy to it. So there's what's being said on one level and what's being done. And then we have the layer of like this secret communication. Mm. And we talk a lot about tropes in flash fiction and stories that we see come up again and again. This is not one of them. This is an original idea and it stands out on its originality.
It really does. And that's that element of surprise in this case that you unique kind of form of communication that we don't see often. And look, it's not that it's never, ever been appeared in fiction before, yeah. but certainly for us, this is fresh and new and clearly inspired by the anti-prompt, which is really great to see. We love to see how it takes you down these different paths and gives something new that you might not have otherwise thought about.
Mm.
One challenge, though, we talked about the goblins in Marina's comments there, and Marina made the comment that Natalie had shared with her a suggestion for a passive sentence, which was a gloved hand extended in her direction. Now, I'm not sure that is a passive construction, in fact, and it is what we would describe. We talked before and in one of the other Daredevils about disembodied body parts, and to me, that's more what this is, a gloved hand extending.
Well, yeah, I guess the passive sentence would be a gloved hand was extended in her direction.
Yes.
Rather than extended.
Yeah, because the gloved hand is now performing that action, so it's actually an active construction. Yeah. So, yeah, I'd just call that into question, I suppose. Mm. However, I'm so glad because, you know, it's a happy accident, as we might say, because we got this completely unique story from it. So I think that's really wonderful. And there were plenty of genuinely passive constructions in this story, beginning with the first sentence. Mm. So do you want to get into it?
So we start off with, the table had been made, two croissants, two cortadas, two napkins folded into cranes, and a gas candle centered on white linen.
I like that first sentence because, of course, the table had been made, but this idea of being made is such a spy thing. Like, you know, you've been recognized as a spy, you've been made. I don't know if that was intentional. I kind of assume it was because that's the first sentence there. So that's fun as
well. Yeah, that is like Poe's single effect there, isn't it?
Exactly.
Playing in One Direction.
Yeah. And, of course, we've got our cranes there and the gas candle, which will come into play later in the story. So great that you're setting that up there. I think it's great when you can seed that detail in earlier that then gets paid off later. I think that's always a good choice. Like you're also using it to set the scene while setting up what's going to happen in the story. So perfect.
The night patisserie was their usual rendezvous point, but today's meeting was not sanctioned and his phrases were fumbled on nervous fingers. Even retired spies ought to have their meetings sanctioned. But the question burning in his palms had alighted on the pager before he thought better. What was one flaggable event on a clean record? So, I mean, there's a lot happening here.
Yeah.
And we're setting up basically this rendezvous between these two spies. You know, on first reading, a lot of what is being described here to me was a little bit, I guess, confusing. I wasn't sure what it meant. The whole idea of a meeting being sanctioned and a flaggable event. Like, I think by the end of it, rereading it, this stuff starts to make sense. And we know that, like, they're two spies, that they've retired and, you know, they're meeting outside of this spy framework, obviously, because he wants to, like, ask her out, basically. Mm. But this whole idea of a sanctioned event, a flaggable event, is maybe a little bit too much to be here up front in your opening paragraph.
I can see why you would do that, though. We're setting up the relationship between these two people and why they're there. And I don't know that it's a problem to have it. I think maybe it's just a little bit busy there and a little bit more clarity would help. For example, a part that I found wasn't clear was we say today's meeting was not sanctioned and his phrases were fumbled on nervous fingers. But I get later this whole concept of them talking with their hands and their gloves and so on, but we don't have that yet. So I'm not actually sure.
It might relate to the pager, like typing out a message on the pager.
Oh, yeah, good point. Okay, so that's probably the case, but I guess those things are not together in a sentence and so they're a bit separate. And I didn't put two and two together on that, but no, that makes sense. And we talk about here as well, the question burning in his palms had alighted on the pager before he thought better. That's a little bit abstract at this early stage when we have no context to understand exactly what that means. So I think it would be helpful to just be clear. He messages her on the pager and she replies or, you know, just really make that clear for us so that we can drop into that scene and really get at what we've got going on here. But I will call that one out because, again, Dean loved that, the burning question, right? So, you know, there's a lot of good stuff in here. Yeah. I think it's about maybe chipping away at some of that abstraction to really get it. What's the important stuff here? What do we need to know as we drop into the scene?
I'll also just call out that we actually have all three prompts covered in this first paragraph. We have obviously the anti-prompt, there's some passive sentences in there. We have the burning question, which is a great use of burning. And in fact, there's a fire later that I think, I know it's part of the plot, but doesn't necessarily need to be there from a prompt perspective because you've actually already hit that in the first paragraph. And we've also got the cranes, two napkins folded into cranes. So like that stood out to me as well because we read about those three things again and again. And here they all are like in the first paragraph.
Yeah. But you know, none of them problematic in particular. However, like maybe, our first impression of this story is not as strong as it could be because we're getting some of these repeated themes that we've seen throughout other stories in the competition. And it really is your opportunity to stand out here and to focus in on the unique element of your story, which you can set up right away that they're talking with their gloves and hands. I think you can set that up.
Yeah.
Like, forget the pager. Like, I don't know that we need that. Yeah. That's another form of communication done with hands for sure. But I think we could get straight into.
Yeah, we don't need the backstory of how that meeting kind of was initiated.
Yeah. But like, a lot of actual passive phrasing in this opening paragraph as well. And look, again, we might challenge that. At times, it did impact the clarity of what was being said there. So have a think about it. And again, like when you come to this story with that editing mindset, think about the ones that are adding value and the sentences that maybe are not adding as much value and really refine that to get the most out of, you know, that opening paragraph.
And I would reiterate if you've met the prompt in a metaphorical way, which I feel this does very strongly, like this is the whole story being about a non-active way of communicating. Mm. Like it's the anti-prompt is so visible in the premise of this story that you know, I really don't think you also need to lean heavily into passive language in the phrasing. Sometimes, you know, definitely where that makes sense and where it reinforces the story, but it's not something you need to do. And it's something that you should be aware of and be careful about, because passive language can detract from writing often. You know, if the anti-prompt wasn't there and you had that idea, you probably wouldn't lean heavily into passive language. So it does make it very visible. So this is a general caution when you receive a prompt. It doesn't mean that every single element of the story absolutely needs to highlight that theme.
Yeah. And look, having said that, though, I really appreciate an author who goes hard. And I will say that Marina did a good job here. So we pick at it. And I do believe that there's some clarity issues in that opening paragraph. However, generally speaking, the use of passive voice makes sense here and it works. And, you know, a lot of people also want to take that anti-prompt seriously and they want to break the rule. They don't just want to have a clever idea. They want to break the rule technically and challenge themselves in that way. And I think that's really great. But I also think the way to do that here is that whole, the table had been made.
Yeah.
That sentence alone is such an excellent use of that, use of passive voice, that that's enough on its own and still technically meets it and does so in a way which is funny.
Yeah.
And in fact, could have been even signposted more clearly to really hammer that point home, I think, too. Mm. But, you know, by the by, like, that's a personal choice to what extent you're going to challenge yourself and push yourself. But do always beware that when you break the rule, there's going to be consequences. Mm. So, you know, something to think about every time.
Yeah. And look, I'd point to this next line as a fairly transparent use of the passive voice. The real talking was done in code. A smattering of Victorian glove speak, sign language and made up gestures only they understood. It was their way. That is a pretty natural use of passive voice. And if I read that sentence just in a story and didn't have that theme, like, it wouldn't stand out as, this is a really passive sentence, change it to active voice. I think it reads just fine as it is. And so, yeah, something to be conscious of, that your writing is still natural. It doesn't get twisted just for the sake of the anti-prompt.
Yeah, but I think, you know, Marina really did want to go hard here. And in the next line, where it's her glove of ivory velvet was twirled around the fingers of her left hand, meaning we're being watched. Mm. Now, that first component, I would challenge that and say, look, that's not a natural use of passive voice, and that is a little jarring. She's twirling the glove around her hand. It's not just twirled, like she's twirled it. Mm. And I would advise against that, because I don't think it's as impactful.
Yeah.
However, when your whole concept is to explore how the hands and gloves are doing the talking without you, like, I get why you're doing that. So that's completely up to you. Mm. But we can only offer our perspective that it does limit the impact sometimes of these sentences.
Yeah, I mean, it's a trade-off, right? Mm. Those elements that you're trying to build in the story, sometimes you elevate one at the expense of another. So it's all about, you know, the style and the effect that you're trying to put forward.
Mm.
Then look, the next line, the table was beaten with laughter, their gloves making soft thumps like a pair of beating hearts. I think this even further kind of disconnects us from the action. Like, we're looking at the table being beaten. We're not really focused on the people there in the scene. I do love the image of the gloves thumping like a pair of beating hearts.
I think that's really beautiful. Yeah. But yeah, I'm with you. I think the table was beaten with laughter. What are we to picture there? Are they hitting their gloves against it? Are they actually laughing, slapping the table? Like, what are we supposed to picture? Mm. And it's too abstract for us to know. And therefore, it snaps us out of the story, which you want to avoid.
And I'm not sure really where that comes from in the action as well.
We've got the cat. We sort of skipped over the cat there, but we've got a cat sort of pressing its wet nose against the panes. You know, they're talking to each other and they're saying, we're being watched.
Mm.
But it's a joke, because they're being watched by this cat that's pressing itself up against the window.
Right. Yes.
But that's not stated in like a clearly comedic way. So when they start laughing, it's a little sudden.
And it's not necessarily the kind of joke that would result in like beating the table in laughter.
Like, I think that could be more clear for sure. That emotional connection for us as readers, like for us to feel like we're going to beat a table with laughter as well, we need to feel that in the moment.
Yeah. We should get one of those for our bread shop, presumably a cat.
Mm.
He signed in leather gloves. So he communicates this using his gloves that they should get a cat for their bread shop, which is a fairly complex idea, I would say, to sign with your gloves without looking like you're speaking in sign language.
But you say that too. And I actually, because we've gone back to the table and the laughter, when he says, inverted commas, we should get one of those for our bread shop. I thought he meant the table, which, but, you know, I did. And so there's an opportunity there, again, to be more clear without even using any words. I think we should get a cat like that or, you know, a grey cat. You could say anything, but to specify that he means the cat. But as you say, yeah, I wonder, like, exactly how that's communicated with the club.
And then I guess the next question I have is this idea of the bread shop, they're not a couple. So where does this history of we should have a bread shop really come from?
Yeah.
Obviously, they're at a patisserie. It's their go-to place. So you can imagine that those conversations may have happened. But this is like the first time he's making a move, so.
Yeah, like they're retired, so, you know, and seems good friends. And so maybe they've talked about, I don't know why you would retire and then start a small business. Yeah. But, yeah, like it is a little bit of an opportunity to be more clear about their relationship and backstory, I guess, and plans.
So why did you call for me? Her hands asked.
Well, that's a line that we would definitely make that comment about in terms of disembodied body parts.
Yeah.
But like, you can't say that here when it's 100% intentional. So I think you make an exception here for that to allow that to unfold.
What I'm picturing in this scene and one thing that I guess I'm wrestling with and trying to find words to express is you imagine they're spies, right? And they sit at the table doing their spy things and they've got two concurrent communications happening. One that's the above board, like talking about whatever they're talking about, and then the coded communication using their hands and their gloves. And we get one side of this, but I'm not really sure what's happening in that scene overtly.
Because, yeah, if you were just casually like chilling at the next table in this night patisserie and there's this pair of older people together and they're just slapping their gloves around and like
glove city on the table. Yeah. And so, for example, a question like, why did you call for me? Looking at this scene, I feel like there should be those two concurrent modes of conversation to like add complexity to the scene and help us visualize like what's happening. And it would be actually cool if they're talking about one thing and then their gloves are talking about another
it's
thing.
It's the text and the subtext, right? And I agree, like having that balance can provide a richer experience, but it's difficult here because your premise that you've set yourself up with is this idea that that's the only way they're communicating. But something to think about, and certainly like, you make the rules, it's your story, but you can do it that way. It's an option to do it that way. But I agree, like having a more innocuous conversation on the surface, but the gloves saying more and saying something secret is a cool opportunity instead of the whole conversation playing out that way.
Yeah. So his fingers twitched in amusement at her sign for phone, rotary dialed, even though touch tone and paging was the norm in their business. So, yeah, like it's complex signs with the phone and all that kind of thing. She was stubborn, classy and lovable in the kind of way that had many of his old contacts asking after her. Dash it all. He should have done this a long time ago. But the old work, their partnership on the bakery project, the amicable distance, it all felt like a well-worn glove he didn't want to lose. So, look, we get some hint there into like this bakery, but not sure what the bakery project was and how that links to their bakery.
Is it this bakery or, I'm a little bit confused about that.
So, there's some elements there, but I don't think that that's completely tied up. But I do like that enhancement of the glove metaphor, like a well-worn glove. Like, we're talking about gloves, why not throw that in?
I don't know. I felt that was a little bit heavy-handed, you might say. And we go on again in the next sentence to say, would this new glove fit as snugly?
Yeah.
Would she want an old pair like him? And look,
I do like that one, though.
No, I do too, because that gives us his insecurities, right? It carries some emotional weight to it. But I do, you know, that's a personal taste thing, and it's completely within your rights as the author to lean heavily into the metaphor, but I think sometimes, like for me, that was a little bit much just there. But I agree, once we get to the would she like an old pair like him, it's resonant again.
Yeah, she fidgeted with her cuff buttons, obviously sensing his nerves. He was a fool for her. I don't know if this is a little bit of head hopping.
A little, and you know, it's also that thing which we've mentioned in a few of the Daredevils this time of naming an emotion. So she's obviously sensing his nerves. So it's not technically head hopping because it's him assuming she's sensing his nerves, if that makes sense, because he's watching her fiddle with the cuff buttons.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think that's okay, but I also think it's maybe not necessary to impose that on her. Mm. And instead, you just show, and again, it's about keeping the reader immersed in the scene, that if you show her fiddling with her cuff buttons and doing something that sort of indicates that she's worried for him or nervous for him, that's the thing, and you don't need to then explain it.
Mm.
And you need to show it in such a way that you don't need to explain it. That's the gold standard, basically. Yeah. That's always the method to aim for.
So he stood removing both gloves and made to drop them, the way they'd learned so long ago that two people meeting in secret might say, I love you. He threw them down, a jolt of nerves making the act more forceful than intended. But one landed squarely in the bowl of the gas candle. So, yeah, a few things. Well, one is, like, I love the drama of that, like the throwing the gloves down. I guess from a nitpick perspective, I'm wondering why that must be a sign that spies learned, like to say I love you through the dropping of gloves. Like, how often does that come up for spies?
Shut up, I don't care. But it's very
that's
cute.
A little bit of a
why not?
A practical
like if
nitpick.
They're spying on people, like that's the kind of, especially if you're spying on, like, I don't know, cheating spouses or whatever. That's exactly
well, no,
the kind
but
of
this
thing
is
you
the
might
two
want
to people meeting in secret might say I love you to each
yeah.
other.
Yeah.
Is through dropping gloves.
Yeah, but if you're spying on two people meeting in secret and they drop their gloves and you're like, uh-huh. I was right. The husband is cheating.
I get it. I just wonder how often that comes up, like, as a little code.
Isn't that like 98% of private eye work is just following cheating spouses? That was my understanding.
Yeah, but the spouses are cheating. They're not throwing their gloves on the floor. That's what I'm saying.
All right, let it go. I love that, though. It's so cute. Like, he throws it down. He throws it down too hard. Like, yeah. I just think that's so cute. It's like, I love you. Oh, shit.
And then we have this scene of, like, things going wrong, basically, which is what you want in your romance. There's a moment of conflict and
the all is lost moment. Yeah. Oh, shit. Like, I've really ruined it now, haven't I? I've lost my chance.
Which is great because we often call this out in romantic stories that it's just, like, they both actually want it and then they get together and that's the end.
Mm.
So you need something that is a little bit dramatic that could keep them apart. And in this story, it is the fire, the burning glove. You know, as I mentioned in the opening paragraph, you didn't need a fire because you've already got a burning question in the opening paragraph, but here we are with a fire. So the only critique I would have, there was one line that stood out to me in this exchange, and that was, had two ex-spies ever been more clumsy? Which was a bit telling to me. I felt like that was a bit of a telling line. And I don't know why, but I read it in, I don't know, who's that friend's character?
Chandler.
Yeah. Could two ex-spies be more clumsy? Like, I don't know.
Oh, God. Just because your head goes there. Yeah. I didn't have an issue with that. It didn't stand out to me. Yeah. But, like, yeah, maybe it is Chandler.
Maybe it is.
So just with that paragraph too, we end with, he was worrying she'd burned her hands as fire leapt onto the napkin cranes, igniting them like Olympian torches. Just a little Poe-related question here, which is, we've got the simile of Olympic or Olympian torches here. Could we make that more spy-like? Could we get something a little bit more on brand here for them? Because there's nothing wrong with that by any means, but we've got an opportunity.
Yeah.
And so I just had a quick think and I'm like, well, stick a dynamite, right? Like, I have that spy versus spy kind of.
Or that black bomb.
Yeah, the black bomb, exactly. Like, there's an opportunity, a lit fuse.
Yeah, a lit fuse, yes.
Exactly, more so than an Olympic or Olympian torch. So just a little opportunity. And I would say, always look at your stories through that lens. Like, how would this character see it? And if he's just like this retired spy, and if everything to him is about, you know, the table being made and the cat, they're being watched by the cat, then again, here, you can look at injecting a little more spy stuff here too.
No, absolutely. I think that's a good call out. And look, I just wanted to call out in the next couple of sentences, or just jumping ahead a sentence or two, it's something that we've mentioned a couple of times in this round of Daredevils, and that's like glossing over a piece of action or not describing it. Doesn't really need to be there kind of thing. So we've got the patisserie owner came running, bemoaning the ruined table set. So we are left to imagine what that might look like.
Yeah.
What might bemoaning a ruined table set look like? We're not really kind of told. It's a piece of action that's left to our imagination. And often when you do that, like, you should question, does it really need to be there? If it needs to be there, maybe it should be in the scene and in the action.
Yeah, a line of dialogue or something like that. But I agree, like, there's nothing wrong with having the patisserie owner run out and sort of exclaim, like, to react. But in doing that, you create a problem for yourself, which is, like, you need to stage direct this extra character when you're right at the end of the story. And just get rid of him. Like, he's just going to create complications when your focus really needs to be on this couple.
And look, we have that continuing on to the next paragraph where making apologies was done with words. So again, left to our imaginations. And I think, look, there is some element of like, we only do get the subtext here. We only do get the hidden coded conversation. So what's said explicitly in the world, like we don't really care about it.
Mm.
That's what Marina is going for here in the story. So that all makes sense. And I do like the line, making apologies was done with words, but it was her bare hand sliding into his that started the real fire. That's very romantic.
It's very romantic. I don't know though. I think the start of that sentence, and it is expressed in passive voice. Mm. And that was a problem for me. Like making apologies was done with words.
Mm.
That's a very awkward way to express something that happens all the time that we all understand. And I think it's just, I think it's a case where I really would recommend in that instance to just ditch the passive voice and just say they made their apologies with words, you know, and then move on, because the second half of that is so cute and you don't want to detract from that with that more obscure way of referring to apologizing. So definitely agree. Super cute and a really nice, like we're getting to the end here. So it's a nice feeling.
But when they wove their fingers together, gloves discarded, skin needing no code, he felt the world was their rendezvous. So ending on a nice positive moment.
A raw dog in it with no gloves.
That's right. It's turned the whole no glove, no love on its head. And no glove, love.
So. Oh, look, we've just spoiled the moment there because it is a very, very sweet moment. And I do like the feeling of the ending of the story and the story as a whole. Like it's got, it's just a nice story with, again, that element of surprise or that unique kind of premise that it starts with that adds value too. So look, this was a maybe story for sure and had a lot of lovely things going for it. A few opportunities here and there to sort of tweak, but did you want to go through the prompts?
Yeah, let's look at the prompts and look, we have spoken about them, but the word crane appears twice, both related to the folded origami napkins, once to introduce them and then once when they catch on fire. And again, the action of burning appears twice. We've got the burning question and we have the burning glove. And the anti-prompt, like all of those elements, again, we have a heavy use of the passive voice throughout the story, but we also have this great underlying premise of communication through a non-active way, which is like, it's great to see that inspired by the anti-prompt.
Yeah. I think what I take from that and these various uses of the prompts, and I said it in a previous Daredevil as well, but once you have that piece together, it's an opportunity to pare it back a little and find the elements that are really like adding value to the story and then maybe paring back or excising some of those elements that aren't adding as much value. So some of that passive voice I really think could be pared back and would help this story A, be more clear and flow a little bit better and just feel a little bit more natural as well, which would help those all those beautiful elements and that beautiful like romance really come through more clearly instead of like us being distracted out just for that briefest moment to kind of pass the language.
But I think what you've done really well here in addition to like the whole idea is structurally you've nailed it basically. We're contained completely in one scene. We've got a beginning, middle, and end. Yep. And as you spoke about with this romance structure, it's not just rainbows the whole way through. We actually have some adversity to overcome and, you know, the initial awkwardness and all the things. So we go through an arc, we go through some ups and downs, and we end up where we want to end up. So structure-wise, I think it's great.
Yeah, it's a strong story. And hopefully we've given some insights into how you might even level it up again, in our opinion, at least.
Yeah, thank you, Marina, for sharing that with us. And thanks to all our Daredevils this round for sharing their stories and putting themselves out there. It's not always easy to expose yourself in that way. And thanks also to the Contest Goblin crew for like being a part of the Daredevil experience
going
all this
in.
Round.
Yeah, absolutely. We're really glad to have you all. Like you brought such a diverse range of stories and I imagine you shared them with each other as well and gave each other feedback. And that's such a like a wonderful thing to have. And we can see how like polished they are when they come. And we can only hope that we've added value there for you and, you know, that it's not been too painful because it is hard to hear someone just completely like in an unfiltered way tell you everything they want you to change. But ultimately, like we're all just here to just like find the best possible way to write the story that we want to write. And I hope that's what we're helping to offer. I hope it would never put any of you off because we really love what you bring to the competition.
Yeah. So thank you. And like that wraps it up not only for this episode, but for the July round of the competition. We'll throw the cranes, the burning and the passive voice into the rearview mirror.
You just reminded me just before we sign off, I have a present for you.
Oh, is it a paper crane? Are you going to set me on fire?
I've thought about it.
Nothing gets a man's attention like being doused in gasoline. Oh, beautiful. It's a little blue ceramic crane.
A little bit alarming now in hindsight after Eilish's story about the blue ceramic crane. But, yeah.
Beautiful.
Well, you can enjoy that. And
it's not just a crane. It's a, like, it's an origami crane that's made of.
It's an origami crane.
Beautiful. Where did you get this from?
Timu.
Really? Nice.
It may be a little haunted, so watch out.
Okay. But we'll see when it comes to life and it offers me tea.
I recommend having tea for one. But yeah, little memory of this round of the competition, and we are coming to the end of our anti-prompt.
Yeah, October round coming up just around the corner, and it'll be the funeral for the anti-prompt, the last one.
Yeah, and I hope you'll all join us because, I don't know, is it just us? Like, are we, like, I'm sad.
Yeah,
Even though it's completely our decision and it's, like, completely stupid. But I am sad. I'm sad to see it go, but I am very excited about what's coming next as well. But yeah, I hope everyone joins us for that because it's gonna be killer, I reckon. It's gonna be good fun.
I think it will be.
Yeah. But you know, before then we still got the critiques to polish off. Yep. And you know, we've mentioned before they always take a long time, and I know it's a long wait, but we will be delivering those shortly before the October round, so you'll have that feedback ready to go as you approach the October round or whatever else it might be that you're doing with your writing.
Yeah, so No Rest for the Wicked, we'll be right back into it. We'll have plenty of other wonderful things coming up. We have Flesh Fiction results that'll be coming out at some point in the future, probably by the end of the year, perhaps early next year. We'll see how we go with those.
Oh, we're so excited to get stuck into it. It's all just a matter of how we're going to fit it in, if you will. As of the time of recording, which is right before the Flesh Fiction deadline, I still don't have a story in. And we both promised ourselves and each other that we would get our own story in so that we could put our money where our mouth is.
That's right.
Not that we will be eligible for any prizes, but we're just hoping to like trick each other into going, oh, this was a really good one.
That's right. My dream is that it just like makes the shortlist. Then I'm like, I remove the mask like Zorro or something and be like, it was me all along.
That is exactly what I want as well. So,
but I know that you're going to pick it as soon as you read it.
And you're going to pick mine 100%. We know each other's style too well. But yeah, that's going to be good fun. And I really can't wait for that as well.
All right. Well, thanks again, everyone, for joining us for the July round. And we'll see you all very soon. Until then, right on.
Right on.
We hope you enjoyed this special Daredevil episode of Not Quite Right. If you have thoughts on this story, follow us on social media and join the conversation. And if you'd like to participate in the next round of the competition, head over to our website at notquiteright.com. That's WRITE.
Something doesn't seem quite right.